This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared, and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hey, meat eater, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year plus meat eaters units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hey, good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. We are here live every Saturday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is Bubba Da Vinci, and we've got with us my co-host and good friend, Colorado Ron. Hey, how you doing this morning, buddy?
Good, good. How's everybody out there? Oh, my goodness. It's 7 a.m. We got to talk, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was kind of funny. I texted Colorado Ron this morning and said, do you want me to handle the intro this morning since, you know, last week, which was our first show? I went ahead and let him do the intro in the morning just to be a little bit cruel and have a little bit of fun with him because I knew that he would just be waking up and jumping on. And he basically said, yeah, go for it. How are you feeling this morning?
Oh, man, I'm doing pretty good. The weather out here is just amazing. It scares me what the weather's going to be like this summer because it's so warm already, but I'm loving it. I went for jumped on a motorcycle and took a ride yesterday. It was just such a beautiful day. I couldn't resist. So it was so nice and soothing, and I'm ready to hit it and get back to it now. So that was great.
I know. Totally have spring fever. And by the way, happy St. Patrick's Day.
That's right.
Yeah, it's St. Patrick's Day. I'm actually wearing my green shirt here, although, you know, my family's not around to pinch me. But I figured I'd get my spirit, put some green on. I was going to start the show this morning doing my Irish accents, but I figure we probably lose more people. Anybody with an Irish heritage, As anybody that's listened to the show for the last 3 months knows, I can do absolutely no voices. So, yeah, for me to come on and do my Lucky Charms accent would have been just nothing more than embarrassing, so I decided to skip it. But, yeah, spring is definitely in the air here, too. It's been amazing. Yesterday was, like, 79 degrees outside, and I didn't know what to do. I was just I have to say that since I've gotten into prepping, I'm loving the seasons and I'm hating the seasons because, I went ahead and we're getting ready for our next expo. And on top of that, you know, there's a bunch of chores that needed to be done. So I set my family on their spring break and I decided to stay home. And yesterday I finished setting up the chicken coop. And if anybody wants to see what the chicken coop looks like, they can go to Facebook and look up Bubba Da Vinci, and I've got the chicken coop up there. And
I saw that this morning. I was surprised. That thing's massive. How many chickens do you plan on putting in that thing?
Two. That's it.
What?
Yeah, just two. I mean, two. Eventually I will get to more. And the girls are doing 4-H, and they have to raise some, so there'll be some more in there. But initially, I'm getting two layers to go ahead and start that off. And I don't know how to moderate anything. I have no moderation in my life, and so I get started putting something together. And I mean, this thing, guys, look at it on the web, on Facebook. It's 8x8.
That's a chicken castle. That's not a chicken coop. That's a castle.
Yeah, it's 8x8. It's two stories. And I'm not even done yet. I have windows to put in and the drop gate to put on the bottom. And it weighs a ton. It was supposed to be a chicken tractor, but it took five of us to lift the damn thing up. So I put wheels on it. I bent the metal rod, so I'm going to have to go get a thicker rod for it. This is why prepping is good for me because, I'm not – Colorado Ron is a very hands-on guy. He's mechanically inclined. He does all this stuff. And in my life, if I want something, I just pay for it. And I don't do that anymore. And so – when I'm doing these things, it's like I don't realize, to what size or what extent I need to do anything. Like I bought that last week. I bought that roast and we did that. I did that.
Oh yeah, that looks good.
Came out outstanding. But I got a 7-pound roast and there's only it's three girls and my wife and I, and we kind of looked at it and we ate it for a week. It was like so much. And she looked at me and she said, "Well, why did you get something that big?" And I said, "Well, I see bigger was better." And so I just got to learn that that's not the case. Chicken coops, everything included, I don't need it. That's the reason I'm starting out with two hens is because originally I told Jen that I was going to get a dozen. And she's like, "Who's going to eat that many eggs?" We maybe go through a dozen eggs every 2 weeks. And she's like, that's gonna, they're gonna lay 2-3 times a week. What are you gonna do with all those eggs? And so, anyway, even though I didn't moderate on the coop, I moderated on the number of chickens I'm getting. So,
that's a big coop, man.
that is a big coop. So we got some pretty exciting guests today. We have Jeff Yago, and I've been real excited about having Jeff here, and I think you are too. Jeff has over 30 years experience in the field of solar and energy engineering. He served as the principal in charge for energy reduction studies and solar system designs for hundreds of schools, universities, and hospitals and state and federal facilities located throughout the United States. This guy's pretty impressive with the stuff he's done. The guy's been in multiple publications. Certificates. I mean, he's been, he's got so many awards and so many patent certificates and everything else that, I could probably be listing it for days. And we'll be talking to him after the half, I know you, Colorado, you had a bunch of questions about him for solar.
And then,
guys, we need to kind of give you a little update here in about 10 minutes. We were supposed to be talking to Jim Little from QSB, Quality Silver Bullion. And we were going to be talking about gold and silver. Unfortunately, they had a little bit of an issue with the press, and they're behind on some things, so we had to switch it out last minute. And luckily, Darren Craddock, who is the Vice President of Product Development for InnerHealth Botanical, who is going to be on the following week, is going to jump on this call. And you've known the guys over at InnerHealth for a while, right, Colorado?
Yeah. Luckily, they're right here in Colorado, so I get to go over there and pick their brain. So, you know, I've learned a ton about, staying healthy and which foods to pick and how to stay healthy, living off of food storage. And so, I'm hoping that we can have him on and help him spread the word about his food storage, but also about what to look at in the label on the food storage so that we can understand what we're picking and what we're choosing. Because, some of that food storage, I was shocked, there was one, for instance, that there was enough sodium in there, in one serving to last you a week. And so, if you had to live off of that stuff, you'd be in real trouble. So that'll be interesting. I really wanted to pick his brain and really get down to the nuts and bolts of food storage and what to pick and how to choose it.
Yeah, and I think it'll be good. Now, so here on our show, we don't typically, and if we do, it's our personal opinion. We're not one like a lot of the other shows where we have sponsors that we call out and say, you should get this product or you shouldn't get that product. For us, it's more educational purposes. We bring a lot of people on, and a lot of these people are our vendors. They come to our show. But you might see that we'll bring three different food vendors on and things like that. And we'd like to get their difference in opinion because everybody sees things differently. And one of the things I do like, and I am going to give them a plug about InnerHealth, is I'm a total fan of their green drink. They have this, if you guys have ever gone to the grocery store and seen like the superfoods by Outwalla or things like that, they're super expensive. And I think our entire crew at the expo pretty much lives at Darren's booth. Sucking down the green powder drinks that they have to kind of keep us going. And it is awesome.
Yeah, it's called Interfood, and that stuff, I'll tell you what, that really keeps us going. I mean, we had a shot of that, because they give you little samples at the expo, about 2 ounce samples, I believe. And, so we'll swing by there about once an hour and just hit a shot of it. It's just, you can feel it within 5-10 minutes. You can feel it in your body. All of a sudden you get an extra boost and you just hit it. And when we're running around that expo, we're pretty wore out by the end of the day. But that green drink keeps us going throughout the day and gives us that extra punch we need. So, that's what really got my attention, actually, was when they came to the expo. He goes, "You're looking a little tired." I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'm looking real tired. I'm feeling real tired." And he goes, "Here, hit a shot of this." And I'm like, "Oh, man. I'm not into that green drink." At the time, I wasn't into that green drink stuff. So I said, "I don't know about this." But I tried it, and I was sold right from the beginning because it was just, like I said, I felt the difference immediately. So I'm pretty excited to have him on and figure that out and figure out why it does that.
So I have a confession to make, while we're waiting. Yeah, because he'll be jumping on here in a minute. I want to make this confession before he gets on. So I'm actually out of the green powder. And so, so Colorado Ron and I, I guess it was it's almost a year ago, we were talking and talking about caffeine and things like that. And I don't drink soda anyway, for the most part. And occasionally I do a ginger ale, which is non-caffeine. I decided to give up coffee. And I've been drinking tea for a long time, but I typically drink green teas or lemon teas. And I fell off the coffee wagon last week. 7 months into it, and I fell off the coffee wagon. I ran out of my green stuff, which I have first thing in the morning, a little apple juice and a little green powder, which gets my blood going. And we've been going, getting up so early, getting stuff going, and I didn't have any, so I said, oh, I'll just have one cup of coffee. I'm back up to 8 cups of coffee a day.
Wow.
I know. Wow. You know something? I'm actually having one right now, and I decided I was going to make this confession because I actually ordered some more of the green stuff. Because I'll tell you what, yeah, I'd rather drink the green stuff in the morning. 8 cups of coffee, I mean, at night I can't go to sleep. I mean, the green stuff doesn't keep you awake, but it, you know, it gives you enough of a boost in the morning because I definitely need something to jump me, start me at 4 a.m. But I don't know.
Yeah, just so you guys know, Bubba DaVinci is one of those guys, you know, we do a lot of traveling together. He is one of those guys that needs like 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night, and he's raring to go in the morning, and it drives me nuts. This guy is constantly go, go, go. He's like the Energizer Bunny. I've never seen anybody like this. I've never seen anybody that can outwork me, and this guy puts me to shame. I don't know, understand. I can't imagine you with 8 cups of coffee in you.
I know. You should have seen me yesterday. It was sunny outside. I looked like I was, you know, completely out of my mind because I kept jumping from one thing to another with a cup of coffee in my hand and just bouncing. And because it's only a week in me, it's like you can't even hear it when I'm talking. It's like your son on candy. We had an event that his son got a hold of the candy, and this kid was running from one end of the venue to the other, back and forth, and bouncing off the walls. And I feel like I could probably keep up with him right now with all the caffeine I have in my. I've been up for 6 hours. And I'm already on my 5th cup this morning, and my second pot. So anyway, all right. Enough about this. I need to go fill up my coffee cup again. So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna get a break, and when we come back, we're gonna have Derek Craddock on with us, and we'll get into why I shouldn't be drinking this much coffee, and some of the potentials on how to get some healthy prepping food. So guys, we'll talk to you guys in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's ENERFOOD.com, enerfood.com.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Colorado Ron. I'm here with Bubba DaVinci, and we're getting ready to do an interview with Darren Craddock. He is the partner of InnerHealth Botanicals, and we're gonna get to the nuts and bolts of nutrition and figuring out what's healthy for us in our food storage. And so I really wanted to get Darren on and pick his brain on that. Darren, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I can. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How's things going with you guys?
Good. Good morning.
All doing pretty good.
Excellent. Well, first piece of advice is on the nuts and bolts of nutrition is don't eat nuts and bolts.
Well, that's a good point.
Well, it's, I think my first concept factor here really is it doesn't have to be rocket science. You know,
well, I mean,
a lot of people overcomplicate what good nutrition means, but really part of the essentials is to avoid things that are refined or highly refined. So it really almost means going back to a diet that's as close to what God's nature intended. You know, like you pick something off a tree or pick it up out of the ground or pick it off a bush, you know, it's probably going to be a lot better for you than if you pick it off the shelf and it's packaged by General Mills.
True. I think we have a slight delay here. So one of the questions I had for you is, you know, this inner food that you guys provide, why is it giving us such a noticeable boost of energy throughout the day when we're running around these expos? Because, you know, I looked on the back of it. Excuse me. I looked on the back of it and I was looking through the ingredients and I cannot, pinpoint one thing that's, you know, that's giving us this energy boost. Can you explain why it's giving us such a noticeable boost?
Yeah, it's there's 20 ingredients in there, and when I created, because I'm the one that actually created this blend here in my kitchen in San Antonio, Texas, started about 7 years ago, mixing it in buckets. And basically friends and family were buying it from us and telling us, well, this is really good. You guys should do something with it, you know, not just an experiment on your friends and family. And basically what I came up with was 20 different superfoods. So these are foods that are highly packed in nutritional value. I'll give a little analogy. If you were to go out and have a salad made with iceberg lettuce and a couple of tomatoes, let's say, you're not going to get a whole lot of nutrition from it. You'll get some from the tomatoes, but not too much from the iceberg lettuce. But if you were to make that same salad with spinach and romaine, you would have a lot more nutritional value. So when I say a superfood, I'm talking anything that is natural and good that has high nutritional content. Well, every single ingredient in the inner food has high nutritional content. And it's like basically a perfect machine. If you give it the nutrition it needs, it will run really smoothly and efficiently and energetically. And that's the human body's really another very important little machine. But if we give it garbage, it's going to put out garbage. And if we give it things that are really lacking in nutritional value, we are not going to have the energy that we need.
Okay. All right. So the 20 superfoods, obviously, you don't need to go down the whole list of this, but one of the questions that somebody had brought up to me, and I'm curious on this too, forgive me, I'm completely dumb on nutrition on some of this stuff, but is it true that your body can only consume so much nutrition, right? And then it's a waste or what? Well, how does that work?
It depends on what's in it, basically. The nutrition, your body will take in and actually store nutrients. And then, like in a bank, and then use them later. What the confusion comes from is that a lot of, vitamin supplements that you might buy at the store are made from synthetic vitamins. Well, your body does piss that away, basically. And so, you know,
right,
people say, well, I'm consuming stuff that's really creating expensive pee and nothing more. The thing is, with vitamins and minerals and nutrition that comes from a food-based source, your body can recognize that, and it will store a lot of it that it's not using right at this moment to be used later on. Let's take, for example, protein. If you take protein, it's composed of multiple different amino acids. Well, the body will break it down into single amino acids, and even smaller than that, into peptides. And when it needs nutrition, say, for example, you've got the tissue in your lung, and your body says, okay, well, for that, I need this particular protein that's comprised of these different amino acids. So the liver looks at what's in store, puts it together, and then you're basically renewing those cells in the body. It's kind of, it's mixing and matching from the stores it has to create what your body needs. Now, over time, if you're not nourishing your body with the kind of foods that provide those component parts for your liver to work with, then your body starts breaking down. And, you know, you get premature aging, poor body function, poor organ function, depending on which nutrients are missing.
Okay. Well, I have a question based on what you just said. So, yeah, I've been drinking for 7 months now. I've been drinking the green drink, the inner food green superfood, and I was able to completely kick coffee. And I was just telling Colorado Ron, I was confessing that I ran out of it last week. And I went back to coffee and just had been pounding coffee like there's no tomorrow. I can't imagine that there's anything in there, any caffeine in this drink. What are the things that are allowing me to skip the caffeine and giving me the same boost?
Good, really good question. Basically, what your body needs in order to produce energy is essential nutrition. Caffeine is not providing nutrition. What it's doing is it provides an impetus for energy. It's kind of like a fake energy. It's almost like a drug form of energy that basically boosts your circulation and basically puts you on, I guess one could say, hyper speed. So, you know, it's a completely different mechanism because the inner food gives you the nutrients that your body needs to produce energy. The caffeine just gives you a buzz. It keeps you awake and keeps the blood vessels open, so you're awake, but you're not nourished. So your body's not producing the energy. So long term on caffeine, you fatigue your adrenals. But short term, it boosts energy and it boosts that awareness, that openness in your brain function, so you just keep going. You're almost like on speed, I guess one could say. Whereas, like I say, with the energy that comes from superfoods, you're actually allowing your cells, the mitochondria of your cells, to produce real energy. So in the long term on coffee, your adrenals will break down and you'll actually be worn out most of the time.
Yeah, well, and I find that I was calling Colorado this morning, I'm finding that I would do the one green drink in the morning. Occasionally, I'd do one in the evening if I had to stay up late. And I'm doing multiple pots of coffee to get that same effect I don't know if I should say the name right, with my Maxwell House coffee. You know, and it's ridiculous because what ends up happening is it's like I come down off these highs. And then in order to keep it going, I got to run in there and do another cup of Joe. And then I hit it again and then I go. And I know when I was doing it before, I was almost immune to the effects because I've been doing this since, you know, probably high school, end of high school, all the way through the military, and I was doing more and more. That 7 months that I was down, holy, you know, it quickly catches back up to you, but I'm still feeling those effects. So I guess it kind of worries me that I'm having to do so much to keep up with what I was doing in one glass before.
Right, I think it's time to get some more inner food in there.
already ordered.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say it has more benefits than just the energy, though, and in some ways the other benefits actually enhance the energy because if you look at your body and the way it functions, about 60% of your energy is used for digesting food. Okay. Now, if you consume something that's easy to digest, like, you know, the inner food, for example, because when you make it in a liquid form, either in a smoothie or just shaken up with juice or water, and, you know, it's easy to take. The thing is that it's easy on your nutrition, on your digestion, I should say. So when you consume it, your body's not using 60% of its energy to digest this, whereas if you were consuming, like, a big heavy meal, it will, like, slow you down. And a lot of people, they'll eat a big, heavy meal, and then, you know, 30 minutes later, an hour later, they're wanting to have a nap. Well, with the inner food, that doesn't happen, partially because the nutrients are delivered a lot more quickly and efficiently because they're already ground down into a powdered form, and then you mix it into a liquid form so it's easy for your body to absorb. If you take the average person, they don't chew their food properly. So if you use the old Alka-Seltzer analogy, you know, the plink plink, it takes a while for the tablets to break down to liquid. Whereas if you already give your body a liquid, it's a lot easier on the digestion, and that's one of the reasons why the end of food acts fairly quickly and also doesn't use up so much of your body's reserves, but instead gives it reserves. And that's a really important thing. Plus, the Enter Food, four of its component parts primarily, but even some of the other parts have this effect, it detoxes the body. So the body is always working on rebuilding and digestion and also getting rid of toxins. Well, we're exposed to so many chemical toxins and heavy metal toxins. Well, the spirulina and the chlorella, which are the two first ingredients in the Enter Food, actually help to bind and get rid of those toxins from the body. So you're getting the nourishment plus the detox. And when you're able to detox through something you take every day, your body doesn't have to use as much energy for detoxification.
And someone told me, and I haven't really read the label that much, but it's also gluten-free, right? That was important to my wife. That's who actually told me what it was, that it was a gluten-free product.
Yes, it is gluten-free. Basically, the interesting thing is it has wheatgrass and barley grass in it. So you think, well, wait a minute, it's got wheat and it's got barley, right? So it must have some gluten. What happens, though, the seed, when the seed is grown into grass, it uses the gluten as fuel to grow. And then once it's grown, there's no more gluten in the grain. So basically, well, there's no grain in the Enter Food because you just snip the grass off and then the grass is juiced or powdered. In fact, there are both of those in there, so you get the fiber plus the nutrition. And so that's why it's gluten-free, because there is no grain in it. It's just the grass, and the grass doesn't have any gluten.
So, well, and go ahead, Colorado.
I too have a confession. I guess this is confession hour. We, for a while there, I was addicted to Starbucks. What somebody at Starbucks once told me was a girly drink.
It is a girly drink. I agree with them.
I'm going to come
with a pink umbrella.
I love their double chocolatey chip frappuccinos. So it might be a girly drink, but I don't drink caffeine or coffee, so that was the closest drink I could get when I was at Starbucks. Well, I instantly became addicted to that. Now, on the flip side of that coin, last night, my wife and I went out on a date, and we came home, and the kids were watching a movie, and they asked if they could have a chocolate drink. And what I noticed is, you know, we use another product you have is the Coco Mojo. And I put Coco Mojo in a blender with some coconut powder, coconut milk powder, and then we blend that up. And, you know, the big fear is that I'm usually bouncing off the walls, or my kids are bouncing off the walls, and my ears start ringing when I drink one of those Starbucks drinks. But when we drank the Coco Mojo, the kids still went to bed at, you know, 9 o'clock without issue. And so what is the difference between like the drink I have at Starbucks and your Coco Mojo mixture?
Firstly, the sugar in the drink at Starbucks is going to be a refined sugar, so it's going to spike blood sugar. The sweetener in the Coco Mojo, number one, there's a lot less of it, and secondly, it's a low glycemic sweetener that's unrefined. I mean, it's really literally made in the way that people used to make sugar, you know, in the old times, but it's from the nectar of the coconut flower. So that nectar is collected, and it's interesting, it's collected in a way that's very sustainable, so you'll have people on these little catwalks between coconut palms, and they'll go and collect the nectar, fill up this backpack that's able to hold liquid, and come down, pour it into a big vat, and then they boil it down to a syrup and dry it, and then they grind it up into a powder, and that's your sugar. So it's completely unrefined. A lot of people don't realize that in refining sugar, they're allowed to use small amounts of lead. They're allowed to use chlorine to bleach sugar down to that, you know, white powder. It's got to be pure, right? It must be good for you because it's pure. But unfortunately, it's quite the opposite. So the coconut, the Coco Mojo, has that completely unrefined, low glycemic coconut palm sugar, which actually still retains a lot of its minerals that a white sugar has no minerals in. So you're getting nutrition from it. It's not going to spike your blood sugar. And plus, the cocoa powder is non-Dutched, which means that normally they'll use alkalis to get the bitterness out of the cocoa. But this particular variety of cocoa we have is not Dutched, and it's a low bitterness variety of cocoa. So you combine those two together, and then you add the magic ingredients, which is a blend of medicinal mushrooms. And these are legal mushrooms, by the way. Just before anyone asks any questions, they actually have an effect on the body which is, well, multifaceted. They're adaptogens, so they actually help the body adapt to stress. They help the body adapt to, in a way where, for example, it boosts the immune system, and it also increases energy. So you have, but in a very gentle fashion, so no caffeine spikes. So you get the drink, it makes you feel good, it's got that, especially you've got the coconut in there that you're putting in there because that's very smooth and creamy.
Yes.
And let's face it, most human beings, right from birth, what's our first food? In an ideal world, it's breast milk, which, you know, has a creamy consistency to it, and it's highly nutritious. And it's full of lauric, caprylic, and capric acids, which help to kill off bacteria, viruses, fungi, etc., that are not good for you. Because a lot of people get this feeling, this thought that fungi, you know, must be bad for you because people have fungal infections. But it's very similar to the way bacteria work. You know how you've got good bacteria in your gut in an ideal world, and then when you get an infection, the bad bacteria take over. So there are good bacteria, there are bad bacteria, just as there are good fungi and bad fungi. So, for example, let's take one of the mushrooms, which is a fungi, that's in the blend here. It's reishi mushrooms. Well, reishi mushrooms, or Ganoderma lucidum, actually boosts your immune system. It boosts the T cell count. It boosts macrophage activity. Plus, it also balances your energy. So, you know, you're getting very, very beneficial components from the mushrooms in here. Some of these mushrooms have been used in clinical trials in other countries for their ability to counteract cancer and other immune deficiency problems. So, you know, you're getting all of that in your hot cocoa. Immune benefits, soothing, creamy, yummy consistency, the chocolate taste, and nothing bad.
Well, do you know what causes my... you know, when I travel, I must admit that I do cave and go get myself a Starbucks, but I instantly get this ear ringing and, you know, a racing heartbeat. What causes the ears to ring? Do you know?
Caffeine actually can have that effect on people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because a lot of these drinks, you know, you'll think it's just chocolate, but they put coffee in there too. You know, or
gotcha.
If you're really sensitive to caffeine, just the fact that they make it in the same machine, you'll get some caffeine residue. But unfortunately, a lot of people are out there thinking they're not doing caffeine when they are.
Well, actually, I just had a quick question. Doesn't chocolate have some caffeine in it?
Depending on the variety of chocolate, it can have a little bit of caffeine in it. That's true. But, you know, No, it's very little. But, like, the Coco Mojo, for example, because of the mushrooms, any effect from the caffeine is modulated. You know, believe it or not, on the subject of coffee, we actually do have a coffee called NutriCafe, which, you know, as you know, we've had at the shows before. But, there, you know, not every coffee is created equal. Obviously, for people who shun caffeine for one reason or another, you wouldn't want to drink any coffee. But for those people who do like to consume coffee from time to time, or even on a regular basis, the reason we created this coffee was we figured, well, a lot of people are out there, they're consuming regular Robusta coffee, which is very high in caffeine. It's very it's a very much refined product. You know, there's a lot of chemical processing that very often goes on with the Robusta bean. But we don't use Robusta bean. We use a different bean that is lower in caffeine, and it's also shade-grown. Plus, we add these botanical extracts from the mushrooms in there, and they counteract that racy nature of the caffeine that comes from the normal bean and actually soften the effect. So a lot of people that drink coffee say that they get tummy ache, they get like acid gut, but they don't say they get that at all with the NutriCafe, which is really interesting because of the modulating effects of these mushrooms.
Interesting. All right, so now I'd like to segue into now the food storage, because I feel this is very important, because there's all kinds of food storage out there, and yours is a little bit different, because first of all, it's the only one that I understand that is non-GMO, gluten free, and 100% vegetarian. Correct?
Yes, it is. Now, the only one thing in there, just, you know, as a caveat, just for people who are highly sensitive to gluten, is it does have rolled oats in it. Now, rolled oats, in essence, are gluten-free. But for somebody who's highly sensitive, a lot of times rolled oats are processed in a facility where, where they process wheat, for example. So there can be a little bit of residue, but essentially the rolled oats are gluten-free. The thing about our pail that really distinguishes it is that, well, there's several things. One that's really important is that everything in this pail is 100% organically certified. And, a lot of people have doubts about organic and whether things are really, truly organic, but I can tell you, when you have to go through the certification process, there's 16 ingredients in this pail, and every single ingredient, you have to trace it back to the farmer and prove with your certifications, and go through a labeling process and an approval process through a certifier that takes months. You don't get organic certification easily. So that's something I wanted to say. One of the differences between organic and conventional is that organic farmers put more nutrients back into the soil. So the finished product, let's say you have a millet. We have millet in this pail. The millet is going to have more nutrition in it, an organic millet, than a conventional millet, because the farmers don't put the other nutrients that an organic farmer would put back into the product, you know, by basically nurturing the soil sufficiently. So everything in here is organically grown. Everything is a whole food. So, you know, when you cook up your meal, you're actually getting real food. It's not processed. And there's a funny thing out there. A lot of people think that if something's processed, it must be better for you. But what a lot of people don't realize is the high amounts of salt, sugar, MSG, flavorings, colorings, additives that are added in order to create a finished product. Whereas here you have basically, you got the stuff that's full of nutrition. And it's organic, so it's got even more nutrition. And every element in this pail was chosen because, first of all, of its high nutritional content. So, you know, you're really getting the bang for your buck here.
Now, let me ask you a question. And again, this is me being a total noob. What exactly is millet? When I was over in India, I heard them mention it. I heard it mentioned over there a few times. Is it like a barley or an oat? Is it a grain?
It is a grain. It's its own little grain. It's a like tiny little kind of beigey yellow or creamy colored seeds. And it's really, really high in nutritional value. And it is a grain. You cook it just like you would rice.
Wow. Okay.
Another thing I wanted to mention is that millet is actually alkaline-forming in the body. It's one of the few grains that is alkaline-forming. So it doesn't create the level of acidity that you would get from consuming some, you know, some other kind of grain. So that's a unique feature to it. Plus, it's higher in protein. You know, let's say, for example, the average human being needs about 40 grams of protein a day. Well, one serving of millet gives you 10 grams of protein. So just to give you an idea, if you were to make a meal, say, with millet and lentils, green lentils, which are two of the components in the pail, one serving of the millet gives you 10 grams of protein. One serving of the lentils gives you 22 grams of protein. So right there, you've got 32 grams of your protein, which is a good journey in the direction of your 40 grams of protein a day. The pail also has Enerfood in it, which is almost 50% protein by weight. So you take your serving of Enerfood every day. That's 3 grams of protein. You add that to your 32, you're already at 35. And that's without having anything else. Say if you had a serving of rolled oats, which is 5 grams of protein, you've already made up your 40 grams of protein. A lot of other storable foods on the market, they're a meal, but they don't have the level of nutrition in them that the meals that are made from this pail have. So that's another key factor.
I was just going to say, so without having to have any of this, you know, I'm just getting into our food stores. I think we talked about that 2-3 episodes ago. And, you know, one of the things that's concerned me is the protein count. And I've looked at it, and we've gotten into, you know, I just built my 200,000-pound chicken coop. The reason I started doing that is because I'm afraid that when things happen and I have to crack open some of these cases, that I'm actually not getting the protein that I'm supposed to be getting on this dehydrated or freeze-dried meat. So you're basically saying that just on those few products that we can guarantee the family will get their protein count without having to worry about, you know, eating freeze-dried meat.
Exactly. See, here you've got, I gave the example of the millet and the lentils and then the oats for breakfast and some Enerfood, even if you shook it up in water and drank it. Right there, from your breakfast, your lunch or dinner, and your Enerfood, you're getting 40 grams of protein. So you look at most other storable foods on the market, and I wouldn't say every single one, but most of them, you're not going to get that amount of protein. And even if you've got some protein, it's almost guaranteed you're not going to get your vitamins and your minerals. And that's another thing that's really very, very different in this pail, is that when you have a meal and you've taken your Enerfood, you've taken, say, your rolled oats, your millet, and your lentils, not only are you getting your protein, you're getting your B vitamins. You know, for example, in your Enerfood, you're getting almost 100% of all of your B vitamins on a daily basis. But let's say give you one serving of the green lentils, you're getting 30% of your B1 from that one serving of lentils. You know, you're getting 20% of your folate. You're getting 30% of your magnesium, 30% of your zinc, and over 100% of manganese. You know what I mean? So you're getting minerals, you're getting vitamins. You don't get that level of nutrition from a lot of these dehydrated storable foods.
Well, that's
now, is there a problem adding meat to it?
Say again?
Is there a problem adding meat to it?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, if you've got like jerky that you've stored and you wanted to add meat, there's no problem whatsoever. You know, you could say make a meal of brown rice and some meat, you know, or add it to your lentils and make a soup with it. You know, that's no problem whatsoever. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, long-term storage of meat is a little more problematic than long-term storage of grains and beans. It can be done, but you've got to be very careful of where you're getting it done, because it's got to be really efficiently dry, because if there's any moisture, it will go bad.
Well, yeah, and I agree. You know, the first thing, especially for us meat eaters, the first thing I see when I see a vegetarian, I'm like, well, where's the meat? I want some meat. And you know, I didn't even think of it until I was talking with you guys at the show, and you were telling me how much protein was in your stuff, that I thought, well, I guess I don't need the meat. What's nice about this food storage is if I can't come up with a good meat supply, that I'm still getting my protein. But if I do, because I am a meat eater, I do like meat, if I do come up with meat, I can still add it to the food that you're providing and still enjoy my meat that I like. And then, but at the same time, I don't necessarily have to have it in order to get my protein that I need.
Exactly. That's a key thing here. And one of the reasons that when we designed this pail, we designed it in such a manner where it would have sufficient nutrient content of all the major nutrients, including protein. Now, it has carbohydrates in it too, but all the carbohydrates in the meals that you create from this pail are from unrefined carbohydrates. So they're whole grain or whole sources of carbohydrates. So your body metabolizes those in a different way than it does refined carbohydrates. So say that you consume white rice compared to brown rice. White rice is converted directly into sugar in your body almost immediately. Well, too much sugar in the body also obviously leads to insulin resistance and all sorts of other problems, and that's why you'll find in a lot of countries around the world where white rice is the number one food, that incidences of diabetes are very high too. Whereas brown rice, it's slowed down the way it's metabolized because of the high fiber content. Plus, it's got a lot of vitamins and minerals in it too.
I did not know that. I need to get rid of my 20 bags of white rice out of my basement.
Well, I mean, let's face it, guys. I mean, if we look at a crisis situation, people, of course, they got to eat. You know, and they got to, you know, really your food is converted into sugar in the body. Now, white rice will give you that sugar. It will give you that energy, but it won't give you the vitamins and the minerals that your body needs also, whereas the brown rice would do. So the goal here with this pail, this Survive to Thrive preparedness pail, is to give such high levels of nutrition that when you store food, you know that you're not just getting calories, you're getting nutrition. So my whole standpoint here is don't count the calories, make the calories count. You know, a lot of people are scared about consuming too many calories. The idea is really, in my mind, is it's not necessarily just the number of calories that you consume. It's whether those calories are giving you nutritional value, not just caloric value. So you can say, for example, eat a Big Mac every day. Yeah, a lot of people did. You remember that guy that did that test? What was it now?
Yeah,
American Way
keeps the doctor away.
Yeah.
Oh,
he
no,
was
that's
so,
different.
So,
that's just, yeah.
No, he was so sick by the end of the month. was it Oversize Me or something like that?
Supersize Me.
Thank you. Yeah, so, I mean, by the end of the month, he had all sorts of problems. I mean, he had early onset diabetes, which he didn't have at the beginning of the month. He had cardiovascular problems, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, all from having that diet. You know, and a Big Mac's got a lot of calories in it, but the nutritional value, you know, back when he did it, it probably had pink slime in it, too.
Yeah.
You've heard that story about pink slime lately, right?
Excellent segue, because we're getting close to the hour, and I wanted to make sure I got to something, which is you do video, kind of like video articles or video commentary on the daily dose, correct? Which is
yes,
the last thing you did was on pink slime.
Yes. I do so many of them. Sometimes it takes a day or so to get it up there, you know, onto YouTube. And once my colleague edits it and does the taglines and everything like that. But I did that this week, that pink slime one. In fact, I've done two on it. But it's astonishing. You know, I do this daily dose. I record at least one video a day, and then we put them up on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, and it's actually on the front page of our website, which is at enerfood.com. That's ENERF like Frank, OOD, com. And, you know, my colleagues are saying to me, gosh, Darren, you have such a wealth of knowledge. You're able to talk on this thing. You talk on your radio show. But we realize that the average person is so busy that in order to get good, I guess, segues or pieces on elements that can really affect their choices regarding their nutrition, we need to do it in short spurts, you know, like 5 minutes max, 5-6 minutes max, or 3 to 5 minutes. So we can give people easy information they can download to their phones, to their computers, what have you. And so we started doing the Daily Dose about 6 to 8 weeks ago, and it's been really fun.
Yeah, and I watched the last video, which was say no to pink slime and ground beef from school. And I like the way that you do them. I mean, it's you're not standing on a soapbox. You know, you're just which turns me off personally when people are basically saying, hey, look, you have to go do this and this. You kind of just give the facts and just kind of let it roll and say, here's the reason why you don't want to do this. It didn't feel soapboxy to me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that thought because, I've been in doing radio for about 3 years. I've been doing nutritional consultations with individuals for probably 15 plus years. And I've kind of come to learn over time that you don't want to force feed anybody. You don't want to push anybody into saying, you've got to do this, 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 and this. They feel like they're back in school and their least favorite teacher is forcing them to do stuff they don't want to do. But people also have a thirst for knowledge. People also recognize that the status quo nutritionally and medically is not serving them the way it should do. And that's why you've got programs on TV such as Dr. Oz and others who are trying to kind of give people information. And sometimes, people, I think, are much more open if it's done in a friendly manner and if it's done in a non-threatening manner. And I've learned over the years that if you give people the information in a lighthearted manner and you create an interesting informational segment, let's say, people think, oh, that's not too big of a different deal to change. I could do that. You know, people need to feel like they're able to make the choice. They get the information. They're not force-fed or forced in any manner, but they're able to say to themselves, wow, I didn't know that. Hey, I'm going to make that change myself.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people. If you preach to me, I'm probably going to let it go in one ear and out the other. If you give me information and you challenge me to contradict you or prove a different method, I will probably end up on the internet or reading the backs of labels and everything else and rising up to the challenge and end up going the right direction afterwards. So
yeah, that's a really important point because I think people essentially want to be healthy. I mean, that's the baseline here. People want to be healthy. But they need the right information, and they need that information not to be threatening so that they can make the choice themselves.
Right. And now not only do you do the videos, but you also have – and we really shouldn't be mentioning this because it's competition, but you have your own radio channel too. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. It's actually survive2thrive.net. That's the network. And then I do a show Monday and Wednesday – at 6 till 7 Central Time. It's called Total Health Freedom.
Total Health Freedom. And how long have you been doing that?
God, I think it's about 3 years now.
Wow, that's significant.
Yeah, we've been doing it on... We started off with a different network, and then it's probably been about 2 years with this current network. And I'm also trying to negotiate my way around the whole... Blog Talk Radio to try and get get a little bit more traffic for the show because I'd like more people to hear it. Really, it's very interesting information. It's all related to health, but sometimes you might tune in and think, well, what's this got to do with health? Because I talk about even political issues that affect our health. So if the government's about to pass legislation that could affect whether we have access to supplements or say, for example, it subsidizes a particular food in farming but doesn't subsidize others, I mean, that's information I think the public needs to know, because a lot of times people are just completely unaware of how legislation affects their health. But there are a lot of things that go on in that regard. Sometimes I'll have guests on. I had a guest on regarding preparedness a couple of weeks ago who talked about an institute. In fact, he was one of the vendors at the show that you guys just recently did in Mesquite, Texas. I had Butch Tendall of the Plowshare Institute come on and talk about their institute and, you know, the skills that people can learn there to be prepared. So that's a couple of things. I've got a guy from Australia coming on Monday to talk about food forests, and that's really how to plant trees, shrubs, bushes, what have you, in a manner that can give you production that's really efficient so that you can grow food in your home.
Nice. The you know, I really like that food forest deal. My brother kind of turned me on to articles on that and had me reading that stuff, and it's very interesting because we're actually, you know, plotting out and redesigning our backyard right now as we speak. So I'm definitely tuning in on that one. Yeah. So
that's great.
Well, hey, it's innerfood.com, correct? And
yes,
what are some of the other links you want to share?
Sure, it's enerfood.com, which is E-N-E-R-F like Frank, O-O-D.com. Our phone number is 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238. The daily dose you can actually see by going to enerfood.com, and there's a way also to sign up for it, so it will just hit your inbox when a new video comes up. The channel on YouTube is the Enerfood channel, so you can find the daily doses there. And the site for Total Health Freedom is Survive, the number two, Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, .net, survivetothrive.net. And on that site, you can click on the Listen Live button to listen to my shows on Mondays and Wednesdays. All previous shows are archived, too. So actually, for your interest, Ron, I interviewed a guy back in November, I think it was mid-November, Dave Jackie, who wrote the book, definitive book on food forests, and so we had a really good interview there. Yeah, so that will be of interest to you there.
Yeah, I'll definitely download that one. Well, hey, I really appreciate it, Darren. I really appreciate you coming on and helping. And I'd like to invite you back on at a later date to jump into some more detail, because you definitely have a wealth of knowledge there. I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
After
well,
I thank my
guys. Yeah.
What?
Thank you guys for having me on.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. All right, guys, we're going to go to commercial, and when we come back, we'll be talking about some of the other things that will be coming up with the expo. And then in the middle of the hour, we'll be talking to Jeff Yago from about everything solar. So we'll talk to you guys in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Beckwith Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed, with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. Wow, Colorado, that was actually a good segment. I actually like talking to Darren.
Darren's awesome. He's just such a wealth of information. And, I'm at that age now, and here's the thing that I've noticed is, I've got friends that are up in their 70s and 80-year-olds, I was sitting there comparing them the other day. Me and my wife were actually talking to them. One of them, eats a typical American diet, cheeseburgers, hot dogs, and all that stuff, and he has a real hard time getting around. He has some serious health issues. And it's just not healthy, and I've got another guy that outworks me, and he's climbed every 14er in Colorado, and he's 78 years old. And he does it every year. He climbs 14ers every year. And, it's just amazing the difference. And so, I'm at the age right now where I need to make a decision for myself. Do I want to, yeah, I might live till I'm 80, but it also comes down to quality of life too. And so, making those healthier food choices for me is kind of a no-brainer because I hate doctors and I hate going to the doctor. And the guy that eats the American diet is constantly at the doctor, where the other guy hasn't been to the doctor in years. So it's a real, real big difference, even though they're both the same age. So.
Right. So, and guys, once again, I just want to reiterate, although – both Colorado and I are big fans of the green drink, the superfood, and everything else. Each one of you need to make your own decision, and which is exactly why you need to come to our expos. Because we have a variety of we have Inner Health there. We have I can't even think of all the food companies we have now. But each one is there. What ends up happening is they all go ahead and have their samples there. They all do it, and it gives you the ability to talk to them in person, make the decision on what you think is best for you, and then kind of move on. Because again, it's all about education. It's all about making sure that we give you as much enough information that you guys can make an educated choice. And so, although my educated choice for especially the green drink was, it was going with these guys. Although I kind of like the concept that they have coffee, and so I can actually get a healthy coffee.
I knew it.
As soon as you said that, I was like, ooh, I can be on both sides of the fence. I can be eating, organic and better. I can have coffee.
I said, Darren, no. As soon as he said it, I was like, no, Darren, you just killed it.
That's okay. You know something? I actually like the way I feel with the green drink. And I actually might break into we got one of the buckets that they do. Nobody in my family are vegetarians, but I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna break into the bucket. Spring's here. Going to do some outdoor cooking. I may break into it just for the fact that kind of taste it and find out exactly what it's like, because I think I could go vegetarian if I had, because we have the supplemental food. You know, we have cattle. We have, you know, we're getting rabbits here in the near future. We've got chickens. So I'm like you. I'm a meat eater. But if, as long as I know I'm growing everything grass-fed and organic here on our property, so having that and having being able to supplement it, I think I might be able to do it. I wouldn't swear to it, but I think I probably could.
And I agree. It's good stuff. And knowing that that you're making good choices for your family and helping them stay healthy. And like I said, that green drink alone, the energy level and the way I feel after drinking that stuff is just amazing. But the, I don't want to sound like a big pitch fest for this guy, for this interview, but it is good stuff. I do have another small confession to make, though.
Okay, please do.
All right. I got a little gun crazy this week, and I bought another gun.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I did. I know. My wife's going to kill me.
What'd you get?
I bought a Smith & Wesson Governor. Have you seen one of those?
Smith & Wesson Governor. It's a pistol.
It's a revolver. All right? And it's a six-shot, and you can choose either 410, 45 Long Colt, or 45 ACP. It'll shoot all three.
Right. Okay, so it's like the Judge.
The Judge. It's like the Judge, yes. But the Smith & Wesson has, in my opinion, had a better grip, and it had six shots instead of five shots, where the Judge only had five.
Hmm.
So I got one. It's a cool gun, man.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, you're shooting 410, and Winchester has a new defense, the defense ammo or whatever. It comes with like three flat pellets, and then right behind it is seven regular pellets. And so, I mean, you're at 15 feet. You're hitting the whole chest area of a target silhouette. I mean, it's amazing. It's a really cool gun. I really like it.
Well,
I'm in trouble.
I bought for my wife a long time ago, and for my for the girls, you know, they're not old enough to do it. They carry Bond two shot, unfortunately, Derringers, which are also 410,
nice.
45 ACP, 45 Colt. So, I mean, they're real small. I mean, it's a little two-shot Derringer, that is easy to hide. I wanted to go ahead and get her something like the Governor or the Judge, but she doesn't like anything that big in her purse. She's got the top one loaded with 410 and the bottom one loaded with 45. So she figures, first shot, spray them. Second shot, put them down. And I said, well, what happens if there's more than that? She goes, third thing is run. It works. So yeah, I'm glad I'm not going to be in your household when your wife finds out. Yeah, this,
I know. Hey, I'm always in trouble.
Hold on. I got sound effects now. That's going to be the new sound effect. That's going to be the sound effect for Colorado Ron, and then directly after that one is the house is going to sound like. Because that's where he'll be sleeping, is outside with the crates.
That's right. Anyway. That's me. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I get it. You know, so it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it is the way I look at it, right? And so it wasn't like you went out and did like what I did, which, like I said, my family left for spring break, and I went and got the new iPad. which probably costs more than the gun that you just bought, and actually has absolutely no function or use when the shit hits the fan. It's like I guess I could throw it at him. Yeah. but that's unfortunately about as much good as it's gonna do. You know, people always say that that when you get to it, you know, and things happen, I've got all my information on the internet. I've got digital files. I've got this, and you know, I always laugh when, especially when I have the iPad and things like that, because they're highly useful when you're running around and everything's okay. They're completely useless when the power grid goes down or the internet goes down or you have a solar flare and nothing's working. So, you know, I always say, get everything.
I'll bring that governor over and we'll use your new iPad as target practice when that happens.
There you go. It's an expensive target. All right, guys. You know, this is our second week here on Saturdays, and we want to get back to some of our older segments. And, you know, we had our segment RadWatch, you know, that we did with our buddy Mad Mike. And that's his new handle. He wants to call himself Mad
that's
Mike.
His new, I like it, Mad Mike.
Yeah, I do too.
Mike.
And,
awesome.
You know, we're going to go ahead and bring him on here right now. Hey, Mad Mike, are you on here?
Oh, yes, I am, Bubba. Good morning, Ron.
How are you doing?
Oh, it's early here on the West Coast, and I hate to say it, but I'm out of my coffee mojo, and I had to drink a couple cups of real strong discaffeine coffee, and I wish I had my mojo because I'm kind of jittery right now. And so the Interfood guys are getting my order when I get offline.
Well, good to go.
Awesome.
Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you, guys. And, hey, I just wanted to let you know that leading into the RadWatch, talking about revolvers, and that just had me smiling ear to ear because, Ron, you picked a good choice, and I just wanted to say to hear about the Derringer, Bubba, that you were talking about. You guys are on the right track. Instead of all this fancy automatic, semi-auto stuff, you're on the right track.
Yeah, it's the KISS system, right? Keep it simple.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
And,
that's right.
And not a lot of working parts in the Derringer or the Governor, I would assume. I mean, revolvers. Yeah, I've got several automatics, I'm sure, semi-autos and things like that that I'm sure Ron does too, and I'm sure you do too, Mad Mike. And the problem is that when it comes down to it, 50% of what I have, I want simple. You know, you just clean them, pop a new bullet in it, and go ahead and go. I don't want a lot of moving parts.
Yes, yes. In Alaska, when I was out prospecting, you know, in the outback, in the bush they call it up there, the only two weapons that I would carry would be a shotgun and a revolver, and it was either a .44 or a .357, and the .357 was my favorite just because it would always work. And, you know, going and traveling through the bush and just being out, and let's say that, you know, something, God forbid, were to happen that would put us in a situation where we have to use our weapons against, let's say, animals and other things, it's really good to have a tool that won't fail on you. And that's what you bought.
Yeah. So I was one of the great things about when we were talking about having you on, and this isn't great for the people that are over there, it's the anniversary of Fukushima.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'll be a monkey's uncle. I kind of got to watch my cursing today. Here they are, a year out from what happened last time, and I can't believe they actually had another 6.8 earthquake off the same coast that had a little mini tsunami.
Yes, they actually had swarms of earthquakes that morning. With it first was registered as a 7.4, I heard, and then it was downgraded to a 6.9, 6.8. But they had four significant ones, and then actually quite a few more. And along with that, a volcano was erupting, and they're just having their normal, because it's the most geotectonic and volcanic place on the planet. They're having a lot of their activity that we've seen in geologic records in the past, but they're in a cycle again today. And what I was hoping to do real quick, because I know it's a short segment, is to give you an idea why this anniversary is important to me, and hopefully I can pass it on to our listeners and yourselves. First, I'm a father, and I hope to be a grandfather. And right at the end of the Vietnam War, some 3 decades plus ago, I was sent to the North Island of Japan for a short bit. And I ended up, I was able to, 3 different occasions, go down into the port town of Hakodate, which happens to be north of Fukushima. Oh, a little bit more north than Tokyo is south of Fukushima. Even though it's on the North Island, it's just right across the strait from the South Island, Honshu. And while making it into town all 3 times, and this is one of the main ports, but I tell you, back then when I was there, it's walking on cobblestone, and it's like stepping back a couple centuries. There were, bicycles and basically rickshaws. But walking through, I was on business, and as I was making it through the town each time, the little kids of the villages would come out and just start following me, and eventually I would have 10 kids, one holding each finger as I was walking down the road, and there were many others jumping around besides the 10. But I would, for a good half mile, I'd have this entourage of young Japanese children. Well, today, 35 years later, those kids that, I never, don't know them, but those kids are now in their 30s, maybe early 40s, and they are in a world that I think we can't even imagine, and that's what's beautiful about you having this segment, because these Japanese parents in their 30s and 40s have young kids. And a year now after Fukushima, I want to just give you a couple updates that you can imagine what these parents over there are thinking on what are they going to deal with the actual problems that they have. Now, we talked about the volcanoes and the earthquakes. Now, the reason why the earthquakes are so important right now is that Plant 4 with the spent fuel pool is still precariously hanging stories up in the air, and they really don't know how to attack this problem and how to remove the spent fuel. Knowing, and now Tokyo actually knows, most of the residents of Tokyo, the 30 million people there, know that if the spent fuel pool leaks, just leaks, and they lose the cooling, Tokyo will have to be evacuated. Now, the reason why they know this is that people have been going around the Tokyo suburbs, and they have found in the train stations, in the parking lots, that that if you based it on the Chernobyl allowable limits for evacuation, allowable radiation limits, the Tokyo suburbs have in locations 25 times the allowable Chernobyl limits. Also, in the Tokyo suburbs today, they have more radiation than in hotspots than what's allowable in Fukushima in the evacuation area. Plants 2 and 3 this week, they tried to get into to do some remediation, and Plant 3 was so radioactive that they couldn't get even close to the door. Plant 2 they did get into. I think they sent a camera in, and but it is so devastated with just the damage and the rubble. They don't think, the governor said that we have to use robotics. And you look at the mess and you think about, okay, men can't get in there because it's too radioactive, and we don't have the robots yet, and it's so such a mess. How long will it take robots to do anything? So what I'm trying to say is the poor people in Japan today, they are in denial on purpose because it's such a huge, huge life-changing event that they can't deal with it because, they're burning soil, they're burning, refuse, they're burying everything. But yet the kids that I met in Japan 35 years ago, they're sending their kids off to school to eat, and they know it. Radioactive rice, radioactive vegetables, all the fish has radioisotopes in it. And so here we are sitting over here, and luckily we're talking about, food, inner health, guns, and, prepping. And these guys over there are living the nightmare. They really are.
They're living it now.
And so what I would like to... Go ahead.
Sorry, Matt Buck. Do you know if that new earthquake that we just had over there caused more damage to the plants?
I can say I haven't checked early this morning, but based on the all the news sources that I have to say no. Nothing has been leaked that there is a new event that would cause, more worry. The only thing that did come out with all the earthquakes is the actual reality that, my gosh, we don't know what to do, and, this is just waiting. And see, the problem is that 30 million people, you try to move 30 million people, you can't do it. Not only did they not have the resources and no place to go, but I think there was a report done or a mathematical model done that it would take 6 years of all the 747s in all the local airports to, evacuate those people via airlines. Now, I'm sure there's boats and all that stuff, but what we're looking at is something that's so large that it's incomprehensible, and it's also, we just, for self-preservation, you have to turn it off, and you can't really understand the reality unless you are living it. And still, I spent 2 hours on Japanese news channels using the translator, and the people over there, they've just almost resolved that this is just what they got to live through and unfortunately die through. And that's kind of why the Mad Mike moniker came up, you guys, is that here... It's not the same problem, and what I'm angry about today, a lot of the moments during the day, is the fact that the governments in the medical world are not identifying this problem, and they're keeping it from us, so that we're not helping Japan out. We don't know the problem, and also the limited fallout that we have here, which it is, as I've been saying, it is here, and people, again, they don't want to look at it, really, because what do we do? It's just another prep chore that we're not prepared for, to deal with. So the only reason why this is really important for us is that things that have happened in Fukushima have never happened before on this planet this go-around, let's say. In the past 6,000 years, the seawater being dumped on the meltdowns have created particles we have never seen. We never had these done in labs, or in all the tests before. We have 30% of the children have nodes and cysts or lumps in their thyroid in the area, and even after Chernobyl or the Marshall Islands or all the Soviet testing or our testing, we never saw that before. So we're in. Actually, a new genre of life, but the idea is that here we actually there's been a there's always been a news blackout, but we haven't had many problems. They shut down San Onofre, hopefully for good, because of their problems there. So without an earthquake, dumping the spent fuel. We're hopefully out of the woods there. But what I wanted to say was, you guys in your neck of the woods have been getting some pretty powerful tornadoes, haven't you?
It's a little bit south. We're in Iowa, and most of them have been in the Missouri area. But, it's not that far from here. We've had some pretty strong winds.
Yeah, and what I'm suggesting is that, with our 102 operating plants or, the 104 that are built, here in the United States, is that I've been listening to, and it's as far as I connect it to the solar flares and the solar activity that's energizing our magnetosphere and then our atmosphere that's causing this crazy straight line winds, tornadoes, and lightning storms and whatever. But the idea is that until the sun, if that's true, but let's say until the weather calms down, I look at that, let's use Japan, say some prayers for those people, they need them, but also keep an eye on it, knowing that unfortunately it could be our turn someday. And the idea is that let's say, let's just go back an hour in your show, we have Interfood. I mean, I have cocoa. I don't have Cocoa Mojo left. I used that up first. But I still have some of the coconut powder, and I'm out of the Interfood. But the idea is that all our food stores and, let's say, Smith & Wesson and this and that, well, if something were to happen similar to Japan, it's nothing different. Well, it is different, but it's a similar set of circumstances, at least how to initially react, as any other thing, as a tornado or a flare. And all we have to do is jump down into the basement or our safe room or stay indoors and, you know, survive on our stores for a short time and have a way of finding out what the true news is so that you don't, you know, go outside and get in trouble for your action. And in this case, it'd be, you know, irradiated, let's say. So Realistically, everything you're doing is correct. We don't have, you know, a plant melting down here. And ideally, unless we do get plant four in Fukushima to send a whole lot of radioisotopes skyward, we're just going to get the slow, you know, a slow accumulation, which fortunately, I think in the short term, we can handle and learn, unless, you know, something else happens that takes down the internet, so then our information stream, you know, goes away.
Right, Mike. We have to jump here on the segment, but I have a challenge for you. Next week, let's move this up to a 45-minute segment and have you on as one of the 45-minute guests. And could you do, in honor, I guess, I can't think of a better another word to use, but of the Fukushima anniversary and the situation that just happened, could you get us a list and be ready to discuss next week, the most probably the most dangerous sites in the United States based on natural disasters? You know, because you just pointed out that we've got many of them here, and, you know, we've got potentials of hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, volcanoes. And it would be, I think it'd be an interesting conversation for our audience if you could say, well, here's the top 20 sites and where they're located, you know, based on if a natural, you know, how common natural disasters are. Like, I don't know, is there one on the Florida coast? Yeah. Well, we have hurricanes there quite often, and I think that would be an interesting conversation if you're up for that challenge.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. I could definitely.
You know what, another thing I'd like to ask you is, and to prepare for that, is the, I'm completely dumb when it comes to radiation poisoning. And so I would like to know how I can prepare in case something like that happened here. So I'd like to jump into that next week as well.
Oh, that'd be great. I can actually put together, you know, it's a large subject, and but as far as bullet points that could be discussed and at least open up, you know, an area for discussion or research for you and your audience, that'd be great. I can definitely do bullet points.
Awesome.
Okay, great.
All
guys.
Right, guys. We had Mad Mike on here. We'll talk to him next week about, some of the most, dangerous places to be with as far as natural disasters and nuclear facilities. We'll talk to him next Saturday, and we'll get that all set up and get it posted on our Facebook page. All right, let's go ahead and take a commercial, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Jeff Yago from about everything solar. So thank you very much.
Sounds good.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specification in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They're the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, It's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Hey, meat eater, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standard for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our 1 year plus meat eaters units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Beckwith Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Bubba DaVinci and Colorado Ron. Next, we'll be talking to one of our writers and contributing writers, Jeffrey Yago. He has over 30 years' experience in the field of solar and energy engineering. Are you on, Jeff?
I'm here.
How are you, sir?
I can't complain. It's really pretty here on the East Coast today, and probably be out doing some yard work after a while.
So where are you? Where are you at on the East Coast?
We are actually in central Virginia, so I guess I'm about 90 miles from the ocean, and we have some really great weather here right now.
Wow, that's we're actually heading out there next week. I think we were going to talk about that towards the end of the show. And Virginia is one of the places we're heading out. We're looking at venues for our events. So we're looking forward, though. It'll actually be our first foray onto the East Coast and then Virginia.
Well, we're also about 80 miles from Washington D.C. And of course, there's an awful lot of activity there these days. It's probably most of the construction in the United States is going on in that immediate area. A lot of new buildings, mostly government. But that's where most of the real construction is going on in the country right now, and everybody else is kind of in a bit of a funk with the economy, but not so much in the northern part of Virginia.
I guess it's good that there's some work going on. Everybody needs to get out there and do as much as they possibly can. So, I was going through your resume, and you've been doing this a long time, and you've done some really, really large projects. How did you get into this field? 30 years ago, it didn't even seem like people were even talking about, solar energy.
They weren't too much. My first commercial solar project was in around 1972, believe it or not, and that was not a large system, but that's when I started, and back then the solar world was pretty much solar heating, solar hot water, solar thermal. There was not a lot of solar photovoltaics because it was still extremely expensive, and solar cells at that time were mainly for satellites and remote locations that could afford the price. And in the early 70s, there was really an incredibly robust solar industry in the United States. People don't seem to realize that, but we had the oil embargo in 73 and again in 78. I certainly remember those times. It's hard to imagine for younger people right now to understand that not that many years ago, you could not buy gasoline on certain days depending on whether your license plate ended with an even or odd number, and a number of things like that. We're doing rationing. And at that time, solar became a really viable industry. We had trade shows nationally. We had training programs, national manufacturers. It was almost like the PV industry is today, except it was building and building and building. And then in 78, President Carter announced the Energy Act, which was going to have this very huge rebate for solar thermal systems, much like the tax credit that's in place today for solar PV. And, of course, what happened then is he announced it 2 years before Congress actually passed the law. So immediately after that that press conference, everybody in the solar business ended up not having any business. Everybody would call and say, is this retroactive? And it was not. So for 2 years, there was almost no sales of solar equipment in the United States. And then in 80, when it passed, all of a sudden you had this huge built-up demand. You had most of the legitimate firms that had been doing this for years had gone out of business. And so you had, I can remember people calling you up on the phone, like siding salesmen or selling, property today. It's so what happened then is a lot of really junky products and poor installations went in just strictly to get the tax credits. And then, of course, as expected, a couple of years later, all these systems started to fail. So I'm not a big advocate on tax credits as a way to stimulate the industry, but, of course, that's what we have, and that's pretty much the only game in town right now.
You make a good point, which is, I think people's conception or perception, of solar for the most part is it's too expensive to actually do yourself because, coming out of the 80s and everything else, people went ahead and did these massive projects on their homes to go ahead and get the tax breaks, but they were highly inefficient and very costly. And, I remember being, 15, 20 years ago, people having these big solar panels on the houses, and I'd ask, well, what do you think about it? And they go, we don't even utilize it. But that's not the case anymore, right? I mean, I've been reading some of your articles that you've written and a lot of the issues and things like that, and you can actually – solar is becoming, A, more cost-effective, but, B, it's highly effective, especially for heating water and doing things like that, correct?
Well, it's certainly – today is very cost effective for solar hot water systems. Of course, the difference was so many systems installed had 100% backup from your gas or electric hot water heater, and they had no meters. So when these things failed, you still had plenty of hot water because your backup system was running full time. And so these things would go years and failed, and nobody would know it. Well, now when we talk about solar PV systems or solar electric, especially on the grid task systems, you have electric meter. And if you have paid a substantial amount of money for a system and you're now getting an electric bill that's showing that what's metered going out and what's metered coming in, you have a kind of an early warning now of if you're having a system problem. So having the metering helps level the playing field a little bit as opposed to the older systems. But, again, solar hot water is still a very cost-effective, way to utilize solar. For example, in Europe, there's over 60 million homes right now in Europe that have 100% of their energy from solar. If we look at, Israel, Spain, these countries, every single home that's built in order to get a building permit is required to have solar hot water. Similar things are starting to happen in some of the states here. So we're actually a little behind the curve from many of your other countries. It's really surprising when we you know, for example, you take Sweden, 50% of their of all their energy comes from central plants burning waste wood products. So there's a lot of ingenuity out there in the energy field today that's happening in other countries, and I'm afraid we're not seeing as much here.
So let me ask you, you know, you just mentioned, you know, Sweden and Israel and a couple different countries. Now, Israel, I can completely see, it makes a lot of sense. I was there this last summer, and you know, it's hot, the sun, you know, you get sun constantly. Is it as effective for people, say, where Colorado Ron lives, which is in the Denver area, or like me, who's up in Iowa, who would get a lot of snow and things like that? I mean, is it still as effective and as efficient for people who live like up north?
Well, let me ask you a question as kind of a way to answer that. If I tell you, and the obvious answer is the state with the largest installed solar systems in the United States is California. That is, California has the largest number of installed solar PV systems in the country. But what state do you think is number two?
Colorado.
Is it?
Which one?
I don't know. I was just guessing. Colorado?
No, actually, it's New Jersey. And when we think of New Jersey, I don't think any of us are going to think of a bright, sunny, cloudless, warm, tropical state. But yet, New Jersey is number two. And the reason is it has a very strong state rebate incentive program there. And Arizona, you know, where you are in Colorado is fifth of the installed systems. And Colorado's solar usage has gone up almost 70% in just 1 year.
So 70%?
70% since 2010.
Now, what usage is that? Is that just solar in general? Is that solar as for producing electricity, or solar for heating water, or a combination?
This is solar for electricity. Colorado right now is up to 91 megawatts of capacity, but California is 542, so you still have a ways to go. New Jersey is 313 megawatts, so that also doubled in the past year. So in the world right now, the largest country of solar by far is Germany. Germany has over 7,000 megawatts of installed solar capacity. The U.S. is about 900. So we don't think of Germany. We don't think of Germany as being a warm, tropical, sunny climate either. But yet they are almost 10 times the amount of installed solar capacity as the United States. And for the same reason, Germany had a very strong, what they call feed-in tariff for many years. Now that is Germany, Spain was very strong too, but of course Spain, Italy, which was also a big solar user, but those countries are now, it's backing way off because of the economy and their, you know, their situation economically right now in those countries has significantly dropped their support of the solar programs as far as feed-in tariffs and credits and things of that nature. So I guess a long-winded answer to your question is where solar is the most use is not really tied to how much sun you get. It's tied to the cost of the electricity that you're paying and any incentive programs that might be out there.
Okay, is there a easy way for people to find what incentives are out there? Is there like a one-stop shopping resource place that someone could go to? I know they would list it like by state or by area.
Yes, there is actually, and it's I'll give you the website. It's www.dasandavid. S is in Sam, I-R-E-USA.org. And pick your state off the map. And this is maintained on pretty much a daily basis. And I think if you, for example, pick Colorado, you'll be amazed that there's about two or three pages of different rebate programs, incentives. Now, many of these programs sound really good, and they are or were, but a lot of them have exceeded their funding. They've had so many applications that they're currently, or everybody's in a waiting pattern. So you might look and find a program that's really great and perfect for what you're doing, but find out you're in a two-year waiting list to actually receive funds. But if you go to that website, I don't care what state you're in, that is the most non-advertised, just basic information type of a website for this type of facts.
All right. Well, I have a quick question for you. You know, a lot of us out here are complete newbies when it comes to solar, and a lot of us obviously are into preparedness. So where do we even start? What should we look at as far as getting into the solar game here? You know, I'm not in it to try and offset my energy costs. That's, to me, is a bonus, but for me, that's not the reason I'm in it. I'm in it because if the power goes out, I want to still keep my house functional. So how does something like that even start?
Well, actually, what you just said is probably the first thing I hear from well over 90% of the people who call. I tell folks, you know, unless you live in New York City or New Jersey or perhaps Hawaii, your electric rates in those states are so high, a solar system might actually be cost-effective with a rebate. But unless you live in the incredibly high utility rate states, the average person that I deal with doesn't particularly call me and say, gee, my electric bill is so high, I want to spend $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 on a solar system to save $50 a month of electric bill. That's not
right.
Usually the driving factor. And that's probably a realistic analysis. But the main type of a client I'm dealing with tell me what you just said. They said, look, you know, I have concerns about reliability. I have concerns of the grid. I have concerns of just weather. You know, we're in areas where we have, you know, pick a phenomena, hurricanes, tornadoes, fires, whatever. And people today don't realize that you take something like a hurricane 20 years ago, it might have impacted a lot of people, but it would not have put the power out for an entire week for a whole state. Because we have so much more connected to the utility grids today, even a minor disruption in one little localized area can impact multiple states and sometimes takes many days to get all of this back up again. So there is a lot of concern, and the folks are calling me say, well, what do I do? And I try to break them into two parts. Assuming you're not wanting to be totally off-grid, and that's really a whole subject by itself, but you're looking for
right.
Emergency backup or maybe a weekend retreat, a cabin, something. You know, it's either you're going to stay where you are in your home and you just want some emergency power, or you're looking at possibly a second home, a backup home, a retreat. You know, I mean, I've done everything from bomb shelters to floating barges. So, I mean, there's a lot of different applications for solar. But in that respect, let's say your example of your house, the first question I would ask you would be this. If we went down to your basement garage, wherever your power panel is, and just shut it off right now, what would you find are the loads, the electrical loads, that you absolutely are just you can't possibly stay in your house without it. You know,
TV.
I mean, just, huh?
I'm just kidding. Not the TV. I was going to say TV, but not the TV. I would say probably, obviously, the refrigerator, freezer. You know, those are the ones that you'd want to keep going. The, you know, lights would be nice, but, you know, those can be selectable. But most importantly, probably, I would say, you know, lights, fridge, and freezer.
Well, I'll add a few that you might not be thinking about that really are important. A well pump. If you are not in the middle of a city, I imagine most of your listeners are in areas where they're on a well. I know we are. And, you know, as soon as the power goes out, you have no water. And that means unless, even if you have a lot of stored water, you know, you're talking about flushing toilets, cooking, bathing. I mean, there's a lot. We use a lot of water per person per day, not just related to our own bodies. And so water pumping is important. The other loads I hear people, microwave oven, you know, a garage door. A garage door opener uses a very small amount of electricity, yet it's a real pain if it doesn't open, and you have been relying on that as the only way to get it opened when you arrive.
That's
we certainly are interested in some interior lighting, but not outside lighting. We are interested in, you know, probably a satellite receiver, you know, laptop computer, things like that. So the first question is for you to make a decision as to what can I absolutely not live without. You know, you're going to be able to go without washing clothes by equipment. Same thing with dishes. So we have that pile of appliances and electrical loads, and then we go through those and say, look, to power, let's say, a refrigerator that is at least, let's say, 8 to 10 years old, it may cost you, for a standard refrigerator, it could cost you anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 of solar equipment just to run that refrigerator. So your first decision is, all right, what if I replace that refrigerator? It's perfectly good, but it's older. If you go out and buy a refrigerator that's been made in the past, say, 6 to 7 years, you will find it's about 50% more efficient, uses half the electricity, because back around 2001, 2002, a bunch of new appliance efficiency regulations hit, and those required all of these refrigerators, freezers, to put substantially more insulation in the walls and have a more efficient compressor. So right there, you say, all right, I didn't particularly want to spend $1,000 for a refrigerator, but if I do, I can save, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 or more in solar capacity. So we take our loads that we absolutely have to have, and then we go through those and say, all right, what can we do with these loads to make them more efficient first? So a refrigerator, a freezer, that is one of the highest electrical using appliances in the home, and that would definitely be my first thing to go after. And, of course, in my classes, I jokingly tell folks that does not mean moving the kitchen refrigerator you're replacing down in the garage to keep beer in it. It's got to go, so it's a giveaway.
Gotcha.
Then lighting.
So,
Go ahead.
The key is basically to reduce. First of all, you need to reduce your energy output as best you can. So get the energy efficient appliances. Possibly change over your light bulbs then to the newer light bulbs, and try and drop your output as much as possible. Is that right?
Correct. And lighting in particular, because. You know, we had a spat here where everybody was running out buying compact fluorescent lights, which I strongly am against. They're more energy efficient, but the ones that are available, they're not that good. They don't last anywhere near as long as they are advertised, and they still use a lot of the energy. I really think the lighting future is LED, and although LED lighting is still somewhat of a more of a spot nature, like task lighting and down lighting, as opposed to having one bulb in the middle of a room lighting an entire room, it is incredibly efficient and very long life. And although you still might be paying $25 for an LED light bulb as opposed to 50 cents for a light bulb, a LED lights, for example, that we have in our house, which is everywhere, typically the bulb wattage is around 4 to 5 watts, and that's doing the same thing as a 75-watt light bulb or a 35-watt compact fluorescent.
So where can I go to get the LED replacement? Like, for instance, my wife just told me yesterday that we've got 3 bulbs out above the dining room table. All right, so is there direct replacements for those in LED? And then if so, where can I go get something like that?
Well, 2 years ago, you would not find them anywhere except on the internet, specialty lighting stores. Last year, they started showing up in a few Lowe's and Home Depots. And today, Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depots,
Costco, any place has them.
Pretty much. Again, they're still fairly expensive, but they are amazingly efficient. And what you want to do is it doesn't do any good to replace the light in your closet with a $25 bulb if you're only going to turn it on maybe, 10 minutes every 3 days. So you want to pick a room in the house to start and pick a room that you're in the most, the room that has the most usage, like a den or whatever, a TV room, and replace all those lights at one time. Most people can afford to place every bulb in their house all in the same time you could be talking about several thousand dollars, but pick a room that you use the most and don't replace it one bulb at a time. Replace all the lights in that one room and then go to the next room.
Now, what is the life expectancy of those LEDs? Are they going to last longer than the regular incandescent light?
Hundreds of thousands of hours.
Wow.
Some of the a couple of years ago, and way to tell, if you look at an LED light of several years old, it might have 20, 30, 50 little LED lights in there. And that older style of LED has had some problems with aging. A few of them would burn out. Of course, the idea was, well, there's 50 LEDs in this light, and if two burn out, so what? But the industry has gone to a much more efficient LED design, and in many cases that light today may only have, 6 little LED lights in there. And, you can buy an LED flashlight today that is just blindingly bright with one little LED in it. So it's also the lighting quality of LED is closer to sunlight in the spectrum than a fluorescent light is. So I just think that is a direction that we need to go, and that would be the first step after the refrigerator if your goal is to try to be able to stay where you are during an extended power outage, whether you're going off a generator or a solar system or whatever.
I spend a tremendous amount of time, Jeff, in Asia, and solar and LED in Asia is pretty much what you see everywhere. I mean, you can't walk into any store and actually find incandescent anymore. Every hotel, every place you go, especially in Japan and the bigger cities in China, is all LED. And go ahead.
That's correct. And, of course, the reason is their electric rates are high. It's not that Europeans are more efficient than Americans are. They're paying 4 times more for their electricity. I've also traveled a lot in other countries, and we built our solar home back in 92 is when I started, and I finished it in 94. And in 92, when I was designing the house, I wanted to make it the most efficient home I could design. And I decided to use something that had never been really that much available in the United States. It's something called a compact fluorescent light. Some of the businesses were starting to use these things, but they certainly were not in homes in the early 90s. And I had to go to Germany to purchase these compact fluorescent lights. And when we built the home in 94 and moved in, every single light in this house was compact fluorescent. And this, we lived in this home for almost 12 years before we had a single light burnout. And I know that because they were all new at the same time in 94. You go buy a compact fluorescent today, and I guarantee you, you know, half of them that you buy now will probably fail within the next 6 months to a year. So it's just not a technology anymore that I'm for. I really think LED is direction to go, and I'm just hoping they don't cheapen those too to where they don't last. But right now, about well over 100,000 hours would be a reasonable life expectancy.
Right. In Backwoods Home, you do a regular article. You know, you did the Solar Power 101 series. You recently did an article on, safe water when you're off the grid and things like that. I think I counted over 30 articles just on Backwoods Home alone. And we'll post, guys, the link so you can go ahead and look at Jeff's article. But now I went to your website, which is www.dtisolar.com, and we'll populate that on our Facebook page. And I noticed that you actually have a section on there for preppers and prepper classes. Tell us a little bit about those and how you started those and why.
Well, personally, I've been involved in just wanting. I never liked the idea of being dependent on other people, other utilities, things to continue to a normal lifestyle. And so I've always tried to find ways to reduce, energy usage, and that's one of the reasons I was really drawn into the solar as a business. And right now, in our facilities here in Virginia, we were offering for the past couple of years a class once a month on a kind of introduction to solar, and we were expecting, usually a couple that would come in and have interest in adding a solar system to their home. And because we received so many phone calls like this, it was getting very time-consuming to say the same thing over and over again to every phone call. So we started a little over 2 years ago these classes once a month, and that was drawing in your homeowner-type people who are having basic interest in solar. They want to know more about it, what's the difference between a grid tie, the off-grid, grid-connected, can we mount these on the roof, on the ground, what? I mean, it was just a general informational subjects of solar. But then we started getting a lot of people coming there actually wanting more technical information. They were wanting to... they certainly would be what we would today call a prepper, but of course 2 years ago, I'm not sure we had quite identified ourselves that way yet. So, but the questions were coming more towards, what can I do for emergency power, backup power? I'm interested in battery systems. Well, that really hit home to me because I've been in solar so long, all of our solar systems used to be off-grid. There was you weren't allowed to connect to utility grid until probably about 1998. So everything that we were designing and building back in the 70s and 80s and early 90s were by definition not grid connected or off grid. That meant you had batteries and your system could operate without the grid. And as the classes went on, we started to get more of the people coming wanting that type of information. And we just felt like we needed to break up the class and have a more technical class simply to serve those people who were more interested in solar for emergencies and backup power than they were to reduce their electric bills. So I guess that's kind of how it started. And honestly, we have been amazed at the number of people who are starting to come to us. And I have found that just in general, the reason is there's a lot of people like that out there here, even in Virginia. I have been in and been involved with, total underground bomb shelters right here in the state years ago and now. So it's not just just in one part of the country. There's a lot of this going on now. Certainly not saying everybody runs out and builds a bomb shelter, but I'm just pointing out that even here in Virginia, there are a lot of people who are planning and preparing to have ways to continue their lifestyle, whether it's a one-week power outage or multi-months from a disaster or whatever. They're thinking along these lines here now. And
go ahead, Ron.
Sorry to interrupt. We actually had somebody call email me, and this was a good question, and I was kind of curious myself. I mean, there's a lot of states out there that will buy back power. Am I correct on that?
All of the states will.
Okay, so what's to keep somebody? I'm sure there, it's a numbers game that just doesn't add up. But what's to keep somebody from going out, say, here in eastern Colorado, land is really cheap, and buying a bunch of land, putting up a bunch of solar panels, and selling it back to the grid, and basically becoming a solar farmer?
Well, there's two reasons why right now that's not really the most cost-effective thing to do. Is currently, even though we've had some incredible drops in prices in the past year in solar due to world glut right now and overproduction, we had for the last couple of years we had especially China just really flooding the market with low-cost solar modules, and then all of a sudden, with the economy going on right now, it has suddenly forced all these countries to drop their support of solar and credits and rebates and feed-in tariffs. So we're temporarily, right now, the price of solar is phenomenally low compared to anything we've had in the past. So up until now, one of the big reasons was just simply, no matter what you use to generate electricity, it's almost impossible to generate it cheaper than what a utility scale producer can do. When you're talking about coal or nuclear or hydropower,
right,
it's just really, really hard. I don't care how cheap the solar is, even at the prices today, it's hard for the numbers to come out without some other support, unless you're just in a really, really high cost state. And the areas you're talking about are not necessarily high cost states. Now the wind industry got stung by this thinking just a couple of years ago. Wind was suddenly going to be the real supplier of power in this country. And so there was a lot of investment to run out and put a bunch of wind systems in. And so that they did that, or certainly put a lot of them into the planning and the funding for wind systems out west. And almost all those projects now that were planned are on hold. And the reason is, you're right, there's a lot of free land, a lot of sun, but you're also in the middle of nowhere, and there's no way to get that electricity to the cities that have the need and the higher prices that would help support it. There's just, everybody seems to think there's a power line that runs from the East Coast to the West Coast, but that's not true. I mean, there's, as the industry developed the utility lines in this country, it wasn't planned. Somebody didn't sit down and say, okay, here's where the populations are, and here's where we're going to connect all this together. They basically would site a plant where they have water, and usually like Ohio, a lot of coal and a lot of water available, and you build a plant there, and then the lines will kind of expand out from that hub, and over the years, some of these interconnected to each other, but certainly not all of them. There's still many areas of the country that you can't get the power from one location to the other. So those are the two biggest reasons why right now I don't know that I would say to somebody it would be a great investment opportunity.
Okay. Jeff, we need to take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll go ahead and go over your website and everything else one last time before we wrap up. But, guys, we're going to go ahead and go to break. And when we come back, we'll have a few more questions with Jeff. So we'll talk to you guys in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
All right, guys, welcome back to Beckwith's Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron. We're here with Jeff Iago, who is a 30 years experienced expert in the field of solar and energy engineering. Thanks for coming back, Jeff.
Thanks. We skipped over one little point, which I think is probably more of interest to your listeners today, and that was when we were talking about, well, what would somebody worried about in the prepping concept as far as their power needs. And we talked about looking at your home and things to do as to prepare to reduce your electrical use in your home. But the other half of the equation would be somebody who might have to either evacuate or move to a second location to stay, a much more reduced lifestyle, maybe living off of, concentrated foods and things of that nature, and what would they do? And I like to point out this, is that look at anybody walking around today. There's electronic gadgets hanging off of every belt loop that they have.
Right.
People just now just absolutely expect to be able to pick something off their belt and talk to anybody in the world instantly, to hear any news program they want. I mean, these are all wonderful, wonderful things for us. But go one night without plugging in that cell phone, just one night, and this will be dead tomorrow. All of these wonderful little gadgets that we use actually require a tremendous amount of power to keep them functioning. And so our nightstands now look like little miniature power stations. We have all these wall warts plugged in the wall that are charging phones and pagers and iPads and iPhones and Game Boys and all these different music devices that everybody has. And we just don't realize that grid is just there. It's always, there's an outlet there that always has power in it. And so my advice to folks is to say, look, take inventory of what, whether you, you know, need to take it with you or where you are. If there's no power available, what is the absolute bare bottom line things that you're going to have? And that would be, in my mind, at least an AM radio that will continue to work. Some portable lights, flashlights, preferably LED, and a cell phone or iPad or something like that, maybe a laptop computer at most. Well, all of these devices, there's many small solar products out there. I know on our website we have a lot of fold-up solar modules that fit in the glove box of a car. You can take them camping. But you can use something like that to keep your radio, flashlight, iPad, laptop charged. And so if you're trying to at least get some preparedness going on and you're only thinking about food and water, you're leaving off a big chunk of an important necessity, and that is communications and lighting. And in that regard, solar can be very cost-effective and an easy way to keep all of these devices fully charged up. And most people just don't realize that today these appliances using a lot of electricity to keep them running.
So more like portable solar type setups.
Yes, we have a number of folks that are interested in small solar packages that they can move around. For example, you have a remote site, you're worried about theft, you might have $1,000 or so tied up into solar modules and some batteries. Well, a lot of people are mounting those on carts, and the modules, they can bring them in or pack them up in the car when they leave a remote camp or a second home. So something fairly small can keep all these chars up. Now, you have to remember that you're not going to, so many of these products that are out there are advertised that they can run all your household appliances, and that may be true for a few minutes. But as we talked earlier, you have to try to start thinking of getting appliances and lighting that is much more efficient than what you're normally used to. You plug a standard refrigerator in one of these portable systems, and you're talking about a few minutes of runtime, as opposed to LED light that could run a week. So, the portable systems are definitely something I would strongly recommend. But you need to realize you're not going to be powering large loads, or if you do, it won't be very long.
Jeff, you don't only just do all the information, and I saw on here that you can people can go ahead and you do residential design and all this other stuff. But you actually also have a physical store where you sell some of these products. Is that correct?
We have a physical store in Central Virginia, and I'm telling you, I could be wrong, but I have not found another one like this on the East Coast. I certainly have found several in California. Real Goods out in California is the closest example that I can think of. We have a real brick-and-mortar store. We have all types of products for, we have battery-operated refrigerators, battery-operated freezers, battery-operated lighting. And of course, if it's battery operated, it can be solar charged. And then we offer classes here several times a month for different types of interest. And we're about halfway between the Richmond and Charlottesville, which are right in the middle of the state.
Now, do you have an online store, or do you just have the physical?
We have an online store, which is getting more populated right now. The website has been fairly strong for a couple of years, but the store part We're just now starting to add a lot of the products, but we have literally thousands of items in the physical store. We stock just about every major brand of inverter in every size, many different brands and models of solar modules and charge controllers and like I said, DC appliances. We have solar ovens and we do a lot of work with missionaries. We just finished a system for a missionary school in New Guinea that's it's totally off grid. So we get a lot of unusual projects here.
Bubba, I'm smelling a detour on our trip to the East Coast.
I think we definitely need to stop in the store and go and see things. And maybe we can even get, if we end up doing an event there, maybe we can get Jeff to come out and teach a class at the event.
For all the people,
because we're getting questions that are popping up here. I understand why you would need to do classes, Jeff, because the information, you could probably go on forever and not hit probably even 50% of the questions that people have, because it's completely dependent on where they live and what they're looking to do and everything else. It's kind of a very personal thing. I didn't realize how personalized solar could actually be.
Well, it is, and when you talk about preppers, there's so many out there, as I mentioned earlier, that reluctant to reach out. I mean, they don't have the best of the news media hasn't treated them kindly and has put them all in one lump, and so they're in the first place they're very reluctant to reach out to other suppliers and folks like myself for fear of all the publicity that they've suffered from. And so it's a real word of mouth when they find out that, hey, we're here to help you, and we're very much thinking along the same lines that you are. And we have we have a lot of experience doing this, because we've done everything wrong you could possibly do, and now know what products work well. I would say about 95% of the products we sell are made in the USA. We have almost no imported products at all, and that's just a decision we've made years ago. So we're very much want to help support anyone who's concerned about being self sufficient or being prepared for emergencies. And they'll certainly find us to be a very a friendly listener to their concerns and their problems, and we'll help them resolve them.
Okay. Well, it's time that we have to get ready to go for our last half hour. So thank you very much, Jeff, for coming on the show. Jeff can be reached at www.dtisolar.com. That's your main website. Is that correct, Jeff?
It is, and our solar prepper website is about to come online, and it will be 100% for solar-related issues for preppers. And right now, they can still get pieces of that going to the front website, but it will soon be www.solarpreppers.com or .org or whatever you want to use, and it will get there to us.
Great. And you can also read any of Jeff's past articles. Just go to www.backwoodshome.com, and you can click on authors and then go down there, and you'll see a list of all the different articles that he's written for Backwoods Home Magazine on solar. And Jeff, we hope to be able to have you on the show again soon, and I hope you don't mind, but I think we actually may next week pop in on you at your store and say hi.
Just let us know. We'll be looking forward to it.
All right, great. So thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you both. Bye-bye.
All right, so that was Jeff Yago from talking about his solar store and everything solar. Man, 30 years experience. Can you imagine doing that since the 70s?
Well, he made a very good point, too, that is, that we're so inefficient, it's kind of you're spending so much money to get solar power backup systems because we're running such inefficient items in our homes, like the incandescent light bulbs and things like that. So I thought that was a really good point, and I'm actually going to start trying to reduce my going to LED. Have you used LEDs?
Actually, I have a lot of LED in our household. The LED, like I said, is really, really big in Asia, and the battery life when you do things. So, like, almost all the flashlights that we have in our vehicles and in the different areas in our go packs in the house are 100% LED. I'm starting to see more and more of them over here in the United States, but a lot of these I bought several years ago. And I bought them while I was either in Japan or in China. And let me tell you, I've used them for hunting and things like that, and they just never die. The lights just never go out. And they're bright. I mean, I'm talking about, he's right, the light, the white light of an LED is much, much, much brighter than a standard bulb.
And, you know, one of the cool things that I learned about LEDs, too, is when we were on a camping trip, is they didn't attract the bugs like the regular light bulbs did. We had two lanterns actually sitting on the table, and one had all the moths laying around it, and the LED one did not, which was surprising. I'm not sure why, but that was pretty cool.
Really? I've never actually tried that. So, I mean, you're saying that, that you turn it on and the color of the LED just doesn't draw anything?
Yeah, it had no draw on the bugs. You know, get all the night bugs flying around and the moths and all that stuff. You know, we had two lanterns, one on each end of the camp table. We were playing cards, one just was filled with the moths and stuff, and the LED one had nothing around it. I mean, nothing. So I thought that was really cool.
Well, that's interesting. Well, and one of the things I find fascinating about LED, is in a small flashlight, I'm going to throw out a brand there, Surefire, which is a pretty big, well-known brand for the military and law enforcement and everything else. They're kind of expensive. Uses a lot of dual-output LEDs. And I mean, these little flashlights, they're just super small to go on the end of your rifles and things like that, can put out anywhere from, 200 lumens to 400 lumens and have, 2 to 4 hour tactical runtime on the lights, and that's all cool. But one of the things I really like about it is I use it as one of my hunting weapons or hunting lights. I guess it could be a weapon too. And LEDs because you can do the way that they're set up, you can actually have multiple colors in there. Where on the other flashlights, you actually have to put a lens over it. And so in the same diameter that you would have a regular flashlight with a single bulb, you'll have four bulbs that are pure white that are putting out 110 to 200 lumens of max output for there. And then you can click the button and it takes the other ring that could be your green or your red for looking for blood or being out there and not interfering with animals. And it's in the same size and you completely change color. And I think that's a real cool function of LED, which is it doesn't have to be three times the size, to get that. Or I'm not fumbling around. I always used to lose those lens covers. I could never keep track of them. So I'd get out there and I'd, be looking for them in my pockets and never be able to do it. But, I guess outside of flashlights, I think the thing that scares me the most is the infinite amount of things that could potentially, we talked to him for 45 minutes. And I don't even think I began to scratch the surface, or we began to scratch the surface on what information we could potentially. I still don't know what I should put on my house.
Right. I use the solar panels that we got from
Humless.
Yeah, and I put those over my garage roof. And then I'm wiring them down to the Humless pack in the garage so that I have power there. But, again, that's it's a portable setup, and it depends on, how you want to go about it. What's nice about that is I can grab it and go if I need to. like, for instance, we go camping or something, and the Humless is already charged because the solar panel's on the roof, so I'll just grab it and take it, and there's my generator. So, you know, that's kind of nice. But there's so many different types of setups, you know. I mean, you know, I was looking at what my shop in the back, and I was thinking about putting solar panels all on the south side of the roof and, you know, hoping to be able to power the home out of that. But, you know, like he says, I mean, if it's going to cost me $6,000 to $7,000 just to power my refrigerator because it's in an inefficient refrigerator, that doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, you know, I highly recommend, and I posted it both on Facebook and our chat for those of you guys who are on chat, a bunch of Jeff's articles. And, you know, he did a great series, the 101 series, that if you have a chance to read it, because, you know, we didn't get a chance to ask him this, but, you know, it's one of the things I would be curious about. Maybe when we go see him in person, we can talk about it, is, you know, having the rack of batteries. I'm less concerned personally. I'm kind of like you. I don't necessarily want the solar set up on my household to actually pay back, you know, doing my majority of my electricity and paying back. Although, you know, if it all ties in and we can do it for the same cost, that's great. But what I'd like to have is a rack of batteries that the solar is charging, and that's you're using that as your backup system. And in one of his articles that he did, he shows these people who in the basement have like a rack of, my guess is there's got to be 40 car batteries, you know, gel batteries or standard car batteries, daisy chained together, and the solar is charging that, and that, you know, those 2x4 box frames with the batteries on there will last them, you know, days of total use. You know, and it's like it was saying like 10 batteries with like 1,000 watt hours, and I don't know what that equals out to, but of a battery bank. And so the question is, okay, how many solar panels would you need to keep that whole thing charged? How long would it take? You know, that to me is probably more what I'd be looking for than running it and putting money back into the grid. Because, I mean, I'm personally not highly trustful. And then the other question is, you know, getting the right inverters or getting the right type of trance box so it can convert what that is directly into my fuse box. You know, because knowing me, I'm the kind of guy that would go, oh, I can read only one of these articles, do my battery thing, and then, you know, power goes out, and I'd flip it on, and I'd forget that I need an inverter, and I'd end up blowing everything up and have to replace everything after the fact. So, you know, I found that highly interesting, the articles, if you have the ability to go ahead and read them. And again, we posted that on Backwoods Home Magazine /authors. And that's on our Facebook and on the chat. And then also, if you have a chance, visit www.dtisolar.com, and you can see it, check out all the classes and everything else. So, all right. So I wanted to kind of segue into something. We have some pretty cool announcements that we're going to be doing here in today. We kind of segued into it accidentally when we were talking to Jeff, which is Colorado Ron and I are going to be heading out and attacking the East Coast this week. We're heading out what day, Ron? Oh, the cell phone must be here. Oh. There you go. What's up?
Yes.
What day are we heading out?
We're heading out Wednesday, I believe.
Okay. And the goal is we're looking at, you know, we've had so many people talk about doing something on the East Coast. We decided that we would take a 2-3 day drive. We're going to meet up with some people, hopefully like Jeff, and talk to them and see what's going on the East Coast and look at a couple of venues. And I think we're hitting Virginia, North Carolina, maybe some South Carolina, you know, just kind of going, driving down and looking at 4 or 5 venues. Is that right?
That's right.
So,
you know, we've gotten so many emails from people asking us to bring the Sulphur Lines Expo east. So we figured, you know, we better go out there and check out some facilities and take a look around and see what we can do.
Yeah, and so I guess we're going to start in Virginia and work our way south, right?
Yep.
And, you know, we haven't called them up yet, but you know what I'd love to do is not only meet with Jeff and everything else, but I'd love to go and maybe have dinner or talk face-to-face with Donna Miller and Mickey Lynn.
Oh, yeah.
Just two of our radios.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Because they're both based
in
North
Carolina. Do they even know we're coming?
We just told the audience. We haven't told anybody else yet. So I think what we should do is give them a call and find out. They're both based in North Carolina, which is one of the states we're going to hit and look at the venues. And I think it would be kind of fun to go have dinner with them and maybe record a session together and populate it up on the website. What do you think?
No, I think that sounds great. I think that that would be fun. Totally.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, and then after that, you know, it wasn't part of the plan, but we're also going to, I guess, go. This is a huge trip, guys. I'm actually picking up Colorado Ron in Kansas, and then we're driving from Kansas and hitting a couple stops and going to Virginia south to North Carolina and South Carolina. And then our goal is to be on Saturday, be back in Arkansas. Is
yeah.
that right? Be
yeah.
in Arkansas to do the Popular Mechanics show in Arkansas and visit some of our other we have, Jeff Gleason, who is the Berkey guy, will be there. And we have Dr. Prepper, James T. Stevens, will also be there. And we have Doc Bones and Nurse Amy will also
yep.
be there. So the whole crew is going to kind of be there. So we figured if we're going to be driving, you know, 40 hours in the car round trip, we might as well go over and pop and see what's going on at the show. yeah.
I'm still not sure why we're doing that.
going to see that? Well, again, I guess I was going to
say 40-hour round trip.
Well, I know. We could have flown, and considering what the gas prices are nowadays, it probably would have been less expensive just to fly to each location. You know, but, you know. We do it because we want content. We want to go ahead and check things out and see people. So,
yep.
Speaking of content, you know, I want to let something out today. It'll officially be out on Monday. And the reason why we're not posting it today is because we're still waiting for confirmation from one last person. But we are, you know, we told you 2 weeks ago that one of our keynote speakers is our good friend. Fernando Aguirre, who wrote Surviving the Economic Collapse, and you know, which is based on the 2001 economic collapse of Argentina. And we were trying to figure out who we could have as a second keynote speaker. And I'm going to toot my own horn here, and you know, and say I came up with a genius idea.
You did.
And the reason I have to toot my own horn there is because that happens so infrequently that, you know, when I do get them, you know, I have to tell everybody that I did it. So, you know, genius idea by Bubba Da Vinci. Get my clapping. Okay, so here's essentially what we're doing is we are going to have a two-hour panel session at our event in Colorado Springs, which is May 18th and 19th, and we are going to have the Women of Prepping. And what that's going to consist of is we will have Jackie Clay, huge name. Jackie Clay will be part of that session, and she'll be, you know, she's written several books and everything else. Patrice Lewis, who has also written several books and is a contributor to Backwoods Home magazine. Nurse Amy from Doc Bones and Nurse Amy, and the newest author on the block, Lisa Bedford. And we will have those four up on stage for 2 hours, and we're going to be posting the topics that they'll be covering and, you know, letting people ask the questions and everything else. And when we do that, as far as we know, it'll be the first time ever that we've had this many women of this notoriety on stage in any prepping venue for you guys to go ahead and ask. And we're still waiting for the last person to come on, or get the last person, and we'll announce them hopefully on Monday. And I think it's going to be a fantastic session. I mean, you know, these guys have so much knowledge, Ron.
Oh, it's going to be amazing. I mentioned this to my wife, and she instantly got excited because, women relate to other women. And so this is going to be great for them to be able to, pick the brains of people that have been in prepping for a long time. And so we're excited. My wife's excited about it. And, I can't wait to see how this turns out. This will be interesting. I mean, I can't just imagine the amount of knowledge that's going to be coming from the stage when you got that many people with that much, that long a history in prepping, and that, that much knowledge base is just going to be amazing.
Yeah, and they all have books that they've done and things like that. And we've talked to all of them, and all of them will be bringing their books to the facility, and we'll be signing them for everybody. So if you were thinking about buying their book, hold off and just come down and buy it at the event and get them to sign it. If you've already got a copy of their book and you'd like to get it signed, over the 2 days they will be setting up and signing books and doing things like that. And basically how the sessions are going to work is each one of them has a category which we are going to give them. And up on Facebook and all our channels and everything else, people can ask questions. And then a moderator will make sure to ask them those questions during the event. And then the last half an hour will be a open to the floor Q&A there at the event. And I just can't imagine, some of the things, that they'll ask. I know that I could probably think of enough questions to go the 2 hours just by myself.
Yeah, me too. So that'll be fun.
Now, you met Lisa. You were lucky enough to meet Lisa Bedford last week, right?
I did. I had the opportunity to go down to Phoenix. I was down there checking out our Mesa, Arizona location for October. And I gave her a call. She called me up. She returned my call, and we went to lunch, her husband and myself. So it was a great time.
Yeah, and I think that's what I like about this group of women is, from everything I've read on their blogs, from the different shows that we've watched and things like that, they genuinely seem to be very open and friendly people as far as, you call them up and they're very receptive. I mean, I've talked to Patrice Lewis several times, and when we came up with this idea, I jumped on the phone and called Jackie Clay, and she was like, well, sure, I'd love to do it, and everything else. And even though Jackie, the following weekend, has her first set of classes, she's doing 3 or 4 day classes at her house that, she's teaching people the basics of prepping and canning and all that other stuff there. And, she's taking out the weekend before to go and do that, to come and do our show. So, I mean, that's completely, shows how friendly that these people are when they're willing to do something like this.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. We had an opportunity to, when I had lunch with, Lisa Bedford, I mean, it was like meeting an old friend. Just great people, and I love just meeting down-to-earth people that just, you hit it off right off the bat, and you see eye to eye, and it's just great, and they're so free, so free, or what's the word I'm looking for? They're so open to sharing their information. They love helping people. You can ask them any question you want, and they're more than willing to help. Help you with any problems you might have. So I'd love it. I'd love talking with them.
So, I mean, if you look at this lineup, so I know I've been getting a lot of questions on our Facebook page about when we're going to be posting all the speakers and things like that. And, this time we're going to have a kids corner with its own kid, with the kids stage in there. We have, we're going to have the main stage and two additional stages. And we're just trying to finalize. There's no way for us to ever get the full list of speakers up, even the day of the show, because
everybody's always asking for that too. It's that's like one of the most asked for emails I get is, you know, where's the updated list? Where's the list of the speakers? It's just, up to the last minute, we're constantly adding new speakers, so it's crazy. We can never get an updated list up fast enough.
Yeah, so I'll give you guys a quick rundown. I mean, we've got most of it filled up now, but because we allow people to, you know, when they come in and they sign on board, we like to do the educational stuff. So like I said, we have Fernando Aguirre, who's going to be one of our keynote speakers. We have the Women of Prepping. Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy will be doing two sessions, one on Friday and one on Saturday, up on the main stage, like always. We have Pantry Paratus, who will be doing a back-to-basic bread making. They're doing a back-to-basic food dehydrating class on things. We have Paul Munson, the CEO and president of Sun Oven, who will be doing his sessions on cooking with the sun throughout the event. We have a Snake Blocker, who we've talked about in previous shows, that will be doing hand-to-hand combat, Apache combat training in his booth. We have, Dr. Bone and Nurse Amy will be doing two suturing classes at the event. We have Appleseed, who will be doing some marksmanship classes and everything else on there. We have a guest that we had last week, Scott Williams, that will be teaching three classes on heritage seeds. I mean, guys, it's amazing. It's literally, we're talking about, at this point, almost 70 different sessions at our two-day event that you guys can participate in.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that amazing? And the unfortunate thing is, since we operate the show, we never get to listen to any of them.
I know. We need to start recording these so that we can listen to them later, because that's my biggest complaint. Sorry, but that is. We put all this together, put all the work together, and then we never get to listen to them all.
Yeah, I know. And, it's kind of funny. That's why we actually bring all these people on the radio show. It's the only time that we actually get to ask them questions, because the rest of the time we have to sit around and try to figure it out ourselves. Which, something?
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, is getting out there and giving it a try and doing the best that you can. Would you agree with that?
Oh, man, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so we're at the bottom of the hour. We managed to make it through another three-hour session. We're getting better each time. 3 hours is a lot of time to go ahead and put out information, especially for people like Colorado Rock who are not morning people. We did much better today.
I'm awake now. I'm awake now.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I got to go out there and get ready to try to put sturdier wheels on my chicken coop.
Your 5,000-pound chicken coop.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to actually take it in someplace and weigh it, because it's ridiculously heavy. I can't imagine. Yeah, I'm sure everybody's gonna laugh when they see it for when my two chickens are inside. I'll take a picture when I actually have two chickens inside. It's like Beverly Hills for chickens. something? I'll tell you what it is. It's my bug out shelter for when everything happens. I'm hiding. I'm making it look like a chicken coop, but it's actually my bug out shelter.
I was looking at the back of the magazine, Backwoods Home magazine, and there's actually a book in here. I don't know if you've got it, but you probably want to get it. Is the Chickens, the Beginner's Guide to Chickens, and then they also have another one called Raising Chickens. So there's two of them in there that look pretty good.
Oh, I only have one of them, but I mean, I actually read the book, prior to going ahead and getting started and figuring out what I wanted, what kind of chickens I wanted, and things like that. It was very helpful, and they gave me a bunch of good hints on what to get started on. But still,
right.
I mean, our friends over there at Backwoods Home, and actually Dave Duffy wrote that book, right? Or Dave Duffy's got, yeah, I think Dave Duffy was the one that wrote it. What he should have put in the back just for Bubba Da Vinci is, you don't need a two-story 8x8 building for two chickens. It should have been like somewhere in the back, somewhere really big, just so for people like me, they don't think that they have to do something like that. I think that would have been a big help. All right, guys. Well, I think that's the end of our show. If you guys remember, we are here every Saturday from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Next week, we will actually be broadcasting from, I guess, Arkansas.
That's right. Yeah, we're going to be in Arkansas. We're going to be at the event in Arkansas.
We'll be face to face. Maybe we can get some of our compatriots to come over and give us a hand and live. But we also might be able to pull some people over and talk to them live and see.
Interesting. That would be good.
I was just actually going to make a comment about something, and I was like, oh, my God. So, all right, guys, that's it. If you guys want to talk to us, you know, read what's going on with us, you can go to www.selfalliancexpo.com. You can also get us at Backwoods Home Magazine at www.backwoodsplural.home.com, and you can check out the current articles and everything else. The current issue of the magazine is out, and that is covering all the apocalypse situations that are out there. Very good issue. And again, we'd like to thank our guest, Jeff Yago from www.dtsisolar.com, with everything solar, and our buddy Darren, who gave us some really good information about healthy eating. And what's his email address?
Innerfood.com.
Innerfood.com, that's right. All right, guys, that's it from Bubba Da Vinci and
Colorado Ron. Take care,
guys. All right, guys, talk to you guys next week.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Lehman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers@sunoven.com. That's preppers@sunoven.com.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill. over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wondermill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.